Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, we were so busy watching the corn and the wheat market this week, we nearly missed a 20-cent drop in the bean market. We'll make that up today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason, and later this half hour, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. Our panelists today in-house, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Bill Biederman of Allendale. Chuck and Bill, let's open with this question for the day. When you look out to the 2000 and 2007 and 2008 corn crop, how do you see the market unfolding given the weakness in the metals and the currencies this week? And we'll start with you, Chuck.
Well, I think one thing we have to look at, the metals, the currencies, everything has had in the gold and silver pretty big run-ups. You look at the value of the corn, we've come up some, but we're really not at those high levels. And one thing I think we've got to point out is those world-ending stocks are some of the tightest since 1975. World stocks-to-use ratio is the tightest since 1960. So a little bit different fundamentals behind a corn market than maybe the gold or silver.
And Bill Biederman?
Well, the 2007 and 8 commodities we've been very hesitant to do any selling of, but this week kind of changed things because this week we saw kind of the energy markets tip over, which suggests lower fertilizer costs. We investigated that. Right now you can book next year's nitrogen about $100 an acre cheaper, which makes, you know, lower cost and those $3 prices out there look a little attractive. So we went ahead and recommended 20%.
You were in, what, $450 range for nitrogen then?
I believe it was a little less than that.
A little less than that, so there'll be a lot of farmers that are happy to hear that particular price range. Let's take a look at the numbers, speaking of price range. And remember, we track the overnight and the day trade, and these are week-to-week trades. So the July contract in the corn pit this week had a high of 264 and a quarter, a low at 255 and a half, and it took over the lead from the May. So the corn settlement price at 252 and three quarters was up 3.5 from last week's settlement in the May contract to the July contract for this week. December corn futures at 277 and a quarter were off 4.5 cents for the week. Let's catch the wheat futures at this time as well. July contract at 423 and a quarter high, a low at 395 and a quarter. Again, that's the overnight and the day trade. July is the new lead option. Wheat settlement price there up 22 and a quarter from the May settlement last week at 416 and a quarter. That for the July wheat in Chicago. September futures at 429 and a half were up 28 cents from last week. July oats, by the way, up 3 and a quarter for the week at $1.98 and a quarter. Chuck, what was the most often asked question by farmers this week?
I think they were looking at their wheat was a question that we had this week because I think farmers in our area know the soft red is in pretty big supply, but, you know, it's a hard red lead rally on tight stocks. So they're getting some really impressive prices. You talk about 07. A lot of guys are looking out there and trying to sell some 07 at $4 plus wheat. So they're looking at wheat.
And that would be in the southern part of your area?
Yeah, so a lot of the southern Illinois, Indiana guys, and even up towards the central part of the state, guys who hadn't planted wheat are talking about it because, again, at $4 plus wheat, that's a decent price to get something going.
Up in the northern part of the state, Bill, where you are, did farmers, and I know your customer base is wider than that, but do the farmers look at the wheat market and just say, well, that's nice?
Well, no, actually, we've got guys that are booking out into 2007 more aggressively on wheat than they are on corn. And in fact, if you do the math right now, it's a pretty attractive market.
All right, let's stick with the corn market for just a bit, and I really want to try to explore this a bit and see what you're really thinking in terms of the new crop corn for 2006. As we look at the numbers, the basis followed the market up a bit and then began to break this week on the cash side. Are you fearful at all that this basis will widen even more than it already is as we head towards the latter part of the growing season? And we'll start with you, Bill.
We're concerned about the basis. First of all, there's just a buku of grain out there, and once it starts to come, it's going to be like a sea coming before harvest. So that is a real concern, especially since there's a ton of HTAs and non-traditional type contracts out there that means that those are all going to have to get priced and delivered on at some time, and the basis is open on them. So, yeah, we don't see a lot of strength for this year's basis. However, new crop going long-term, quite a bit of opportunity there going about a year from now. Basis could be very strong. But I'll tell you what, a real key to this is that this speculator-led inflation market is pushed the futures so high, and the cash just isn't there. The cash market sees all this grain, they know it's got to come, and they're just not willing to follow it.
So the key to this is that the cash grain is there, and what are you calling the key at the point that point? I mean, is it the cash grain, or is it just not going to follow the futures high?
Yeah, I mean, if the inflation attitude changes to, oh my gosh, I think we hurt the economy with this high energy, and it tips over, the futures of corn markets tip over and go south, then you'll see basis narrow a little bit. But you're not going to see, you know, 10 under. And like we tried selling corn today or this week in Iowa, 62 under. You're not going to see that get to 20 under, but you might see it get to 40 under if the market comes back down.
How is there a way then, Chuck, and I assume you agree with this cash basis analysis, is there a way for producers to look at the futures market and make it work to their advantage?
Well, one way, we had a farmer come in today we had lunch with. He brought up a good point. If you can build a grain bin and get past harvest, I mean, Bill brought up a good point there. If you can get past that hump and get out there to next winter or spring, you can pay for a grain bin. So the guys are building bins, I think, are trying to take advantage of that. Or if you got hedged to rise, we had a few guys have tried to roll back to the back end months and take advantage of a much better basis. So Bill's point there, of all those bushels of old crop coming, that's the biggest problem with the basis, because I think they're feeling that a lot of guys will carry that crop right into new crop of 06.
Hey, have either of you talked to farmers about these grain bins and trying to get something built? I think I suggested that to my father over the week, last week sometime, and he said, have you ever tried, you think I could get one built by fall? And he didn't think so, frankly.
No, there's a big demand out there. Guys are building them. I think the bin business is really booming, and it's one of those times, a lot of times in the past 4 or 5 years, it hadn't paid to store grain, but now it's going to pay, and that's the thing to look at doing if you can get it done.
Will that be the case? Will that change a bit? I mean, will it be less cyclical with all the ethanol plants on hand? Will there be such a desire to have a ready supply of corn that it might be far better and
on our neighborhood, Todd, we've got a processor, but now they're going to have competition from three ethanol plants. So we've been telling guys to be selective of selling at 07, because those folks with those new plants are going to have to bid against each other, and the basis is going to have to be very good. So, again, that leads you right back to that bin, because of the ethanol plants, is probably going to be a productive thing for a guy to build.
Has Allendale strategized on this side of the marketplace and what to do about storage?
We'd buy as much as we can, and we'd steal it if we can. But I'll tell
you
what. You
sound like Wayne Kreitz.
I'll tell you, and they're stealing grain right now at 60 under, because they all know there's going to be three sectors competing for this grain, and that's going to be the ethanol plant, and that's going to be livestock numbers, which are going up except for poultry, and that's going to be exports, which we know two factors about exports. One is China won't be exporting. That's 300 million bushels right there we're going to pick up. And then there's a possibility that China might be importing, depending on their crop. You know, so if they come in, one of those demand sectors are going to have to give up a little rope. And I don't think the ethanol industry wants to give up or will give up. So it's going to be a real battle. And the thing is that if the speculator, who's normally not a long-term based trader, if he gets tired of the bull trend in corn and goes to trade something else, it's going to have to happen in the cash market.
Okay, so let me throw out a different scenario to you. You're a livestock producer. You're a big livestock producer. You're looking at what's happening in the States. You've got all this ethanol. You can turn around and put your barns in Brazil and have a ready-made market for the meal. They raise enough corn there that if you put the hogs locally, that's fine too. And they don't have the competition simply because if you put something locally, you're not going to really compete against anybody because they have to haul so darn far to get to a marketplace for the export markets. What's the potential that the ethanol industry, as we put it, will do a lot of damage to the domestic livestock market, and it'll end up being a wash in the long run?
Are you talking about here in the U.S.?
Yes.
I think it's going to be a benefit to the livestock. I think you're going to see new livestock markets crop up in areas of Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, further into the Corn Belt producing areas, and I think you're even going to see some cattle come back here into Illinois, because here's why. We work with one of the largest feed byproduct companies in the world, and they are saying that you have DDGs that are just everywhere, and they're cheap, and they're awesome feed, and they're going to compete with meal number one and corn number two. Then you've got the crushers who are going after oil for biodiesel, because that's the cool thing to do, and you end up with meal, which is a byproduct. So now you got DDGs and meal, and you just, I mean, it's almost like, you know, if you'll buy this from me, I'll give you a free watch. That's how bad the demand is for meal right now.
Yeah, but it's an awesome feed for which livestock sector? Not for all of them.
No, but what
I don't think hogs can eat it, can they?
We have a guy in Iowa that's fed it for quite a few years, and he has better hog health. Its digestive system is better with putting DDGs in there, so you can use it in hog feed.
So, but the point is, I think, you know, if you're a livestock guy, this is a no-brainer. You buy corn in the cash market at 60 under, and you sell the meal, and you sell the meal, and then you sell some more meal. Futures.
Goes back to having a bin again. If you're a livestock producer, you need that physical product. The physical is going to be important as we get out there in time. A year from now, it's going to be real important to have physical corn.
You think it's worthwhile for producers, young producers, because I know the old guys are not going to want to do this, to diversify, to pick up a livestock sector, whether they raise beef cattle or something else? Probably beef cattle would be what they'd have to get into in the Midwest, I would think.
Right now, it's kind of hard to do that because they're losing about $500,000 per head. So, you know, it's not a good situation to go into a bank and say, hey, I want to buy some cattle. What do you think? So, you know, but seriously, if they can get into it, usually the timing to get into something is when it doesn't work.
And I don't think we're quite to that point. I think right now they're still, you know, they're still profitable. I think, though, we got to look and have some vision. We go out a year from now, things could be pretty interesting over there in the hogs and cattle. Could be tough.
Well, what does this do for the grain farmer? And I guess I'm thinking about this in the larger term. So we talked about diversifying and potentially picking up cattle or some other livestock enterprise. But it probably would be beef cattle, I would think, in Illinois and Indiana and most of the Midwest, because the rest of it's too big of guys to compete against. What does this do for the grain farmer? How do they look at this? Is the word still, I've got to be big to compete, or are they capable of doing it in some other form?
One thing we got to talk about in corn, too, it's nice to see that $3 corn minus your basis out there, but what happens to LDP and countercyclical payments? So are we really any better off? And that leads me to go into the fact, again, if they want us to plant more corn acres next year, really, are we better off, and are we going to make more money? So the importance of lower input cost or fuel costs, I think that's going to affect the acreage next year. But $3 corn, is that any better than a decent corn price with a big LDP and countercyclical payments?
What do you think, Bill? Is it?
Well, I think he makes a great point. This is going to be a very difficult year, and it's going to take some management skills to show profit. I think you can show more of a profit for next year. However, I do think you will see a shift of acreage back to corn in the coming year, given the price ratios that we have right now. I just think it's going to happen, especially if we have rust. So, you know, we've got 76 million acres of soybeans, almost 77. That's almost 5 million acres more than last year. And you're going to see a big swift change back, I think.
Russ, that's a pretty big if on the rust side of the
market.
Well,
the rust?
Yeah.
Last year, everybody was prepared. Well, that's all we heard about. This year, I haven't heard anybody even buy 1 gallon yet. So.
Yeah.
One thing Todd and I were talking a little bit earlier about, Bill, was the fact the trade, and what we hear, is looking for a million or million and a half more corn acres after that report. And all winter, I've done well radio meetings and said, I just don't see farmers pushing that corn acreage. So it's going to be that June 30 report is going to be big to see if we get that acreage jump. And if we don't, you know, the numbers really get interesting there to see how that's going to turn out on that carryover.
Yeah, and conversely to the corn, the soybeans become way more bearish. I mean, you know, we've seen some companies estimate carryover as high as 900. I mean, we're not there, don't get me wrong. Allendale's not there at all. In fact, we were real close to the 650, but it's going to be a very difficult soybean market unless it gets caught onto by speculators and they drive it up.
Let's take a look at those numbers from the bean market, by the way. July contract high, the contract this week at a high of 610.5. The low there at $5.85.5. They settled at 580.37, the July, the new lead. They were down 13 cents from May's Friday settlement of last week. The November contract at $6.10.75. Off 21.25. I think we'll pick up some more about the bean markets when we talk with Glenn Ring in just a bit. Live cattle futures, June contract, 78.60 on the high side, the low at 76.30. Their settlement price at 77.22.5. They were off 17.5 from last week. And the May feeder cattle at 103.05 were up 65 from last week. Lean hogs, the settlement price there at 68.42.5 on the high side, the low at $66. A settlement price at 68.15, and they were up 85 for the week. May bellies at 86.80 were up 3.35 from last week. We'll talk with Glenn Ring and more with Bill Biederman and Chuck Shelby in just a moment. Hey, it is Fun Drive this week and all week long through next Saturday. But of course, that's Memorial Day weekend. So what we'd like you to do now is to pick up your phone and dial 217-244-9455 and pledge your financial support to this radio station. We think that the work that's done here at WILL on the marketing, getting that programming content out to you on the radio, on the podcast, on our website, the weekend newsletter is really quite important to your back pocket, and that it does make a difference in the way you market your crop. If you think that's the case, now's the time to call in with your pledge of financial support. Dave Dickey and I appreciate it greatly. I'd like you to see you call in at the $100 level. Really, we would. $40, $80, $70, $20, $250, $500, whatever you feel comfortable with is perfectly fine. The important part is that you give us a call at 217-244-9455. Now, if you do that, AgriGold Hybrids and Farm Credit Services, those are two of our current underwriters of the Ag Service here on WIL. I want to encourage you to do that, and they'll belly up to the marketplace and add $5 each for a total of $10 to your pledge at the basic membership level of more than $40 of up to 100 pledges. So that means $1,000. And $1,000, while sometimes that doesn't sound like a lot of money, sounds like a heck of a lot of money here at WILL. Trust me, it makes a difference. It makes a difference when you give us a call. All we're asking you to do is to do it today. Don't wait. We'll be asking you all week, but it would be really great if you picked up the phone right now. I know you're probably planting beans. Maybe you're out in the field. Let's hope that's the case. You've got a cell phone. Idle the tractor down. Stop it for just a second and dial this number, 217-244-9455, and help us out right here at WILL AM 580. This is your Agricultural Information Advantage. Our guest today on Commodity Week are Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities and Bill Biederman of Allendale, along with Glenn Ring, who is with Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. Good afternoon to you, Glenn. We appreciate you being with us.
It's good to be back.
What do you think of our discussion so far, and how about bins in Iowa?
Everybody's doing the same over here, looking for them anyway. And I will tell you that already last fall I was urging my livestock people to acquire the cash product, and I've also been telling my people from then on, sell the cash product, the cash grain farmers, and buy the board if they thought it was going up, just because of the basis play and the speculative money out there. At these kind of basis numbers now, I'm not so sure it's going to work that well anymore. But I just have felt that speculative money is maybe not the name of the game, but it's a key part of the game today, and it's going to keep giving us wide basis when there's a reason to chase these markets up.
I know we'll come back to the corn, but I promise we need to get to the soybeans as well at this point.
Sure.
And talk about this drop that came in the marketplace. We touched on it. But we're so busy watching wheat make new contract highs and the corn following this week that we really sort of missed, or at least I did, the 20-cent drop in the bean market. It happened over the week. And sure enough, things don't look very good on the charts for the beans at this point.
I don't know if I agree with that. In the sense that I don't think they look bad. I think they look neutral because right now my trend work shows monthly trend sideways, weekly trend sideways, and daily trend net sideways. The November contract, new crop bean contract, is very interesting. When you make a weekly chart of just the November beans, November 06 alone, you're forming a very attractive symmetrical triangle from July of last year on. And it just looks like that the swing into last week was another swing up in that triangle. Now we're working on a swing back down. Most of my work shows that it might take until about the third week of June for the bean market to actually give us a commitment one way or the other. That's kind of a no-brainer anyhow, because by then you get a handle on the weather. But still, I think this thing is storing a lot of energy to move one way or the other. And my long-term cyclical work's actually bullish.
And when you're talking about what technical indicators on the long-term cyclical work do you look at?
I look at 72-month turns. I look at the 131-week cycle, or old 30-month cycle appears to be coming back to soybeans and such. And we've got a little more time to go this year. And soybeans kind of sympathize when corn on a cyclical basis. And so that's what's really even more important. And corn is sitting in the second year of the 5.5-year cycle. So you're on the bull side of the cycle in corn. So we keep defaulting on the major cyclical basis to a bull mode when in doubt. So the fact that we've rallied has not been a surprise to me. I think the surprise has been why we've rallied, because we've rallied despite rains, despite getting the crop in pretty well in most of the corn belt, things like that, on the corn side. So. But I think the surprise this year comes in the bean complex before we're done. I don't know if it's going to be up or down, to be frank. And sometimes, you know, you've had years on where I was like a broken record, where I was, you know, a few years ago we started out high and I kept talking about, you know, 508 till we got done with it, until we finally got there. Now I don't know. I really don't, except that I do know that that we're on the bull side of the cycle and that the energy is strong. I would make one other comment, though, too, and I don't want to give people the wrong impression here, but technically I'm picking up kind of a hybrid similarity between 83 and 88 right now on some of the chart action that we've had this year. In 1988 in particular, on the pattern that we've seen in soybeans over the last, let's say, month's time, I've had three buy signals, all that have been knocked out, and I've got a fourth one for Monday, according to my work. Now, that doesn't mean I buy it right here. I have to buy it on strength. I'll buy stop at above today's high. The point being is, in 1988, the same work that I do, it took till the fourth signal to actually catch a long trade, and then it exploded.
Glenn, do you see that there's a tie between the beans and the gold and silver and crude? Does that come into play at all this year for you?
In a different way than we're used to thinking, because I have been trying to track these things, and I have found a pattern, but it is not the old-fashioned pattern. It's a rotational pattern. When it goes back to 2000. I'm not going to take you all the way back there. The most recent event, September of 2005, Katrina hits. Energy prices spike to the top. Almost to the day that the energies make those tops and start to back off, gold starts to accelerate its up move. When we stumbled in gold here in late winter, we got a brief wake-up call in some of our grains and stuff. What we've been seeing happening is the speculative money seems like it wants to rotate, kind of like a herd of buffalo or maybe a herd of locusts, but they rotate from area to area, and the leverage that the speculative critter has is so great that all they have to do is have an excuse to come to the grains, and we can come alive. So, in a sense, if gold and the energy's top, which I'm got very close to confirming some important tops for the week today. If gold and the energy's top, we may actually see the grains and oilseeds benefit over the summer. It could be negative short-term up front as some psychological pressure spills over. But I think on an intermediate basis, it could be bullish. And then long-term, I think I'm worried about stock market implosions. I'm worried about commodity implosions in here. Because when you run that money in and inflate this balloon, I'm worried about it when it deflates.
Hey, Glenn, I have a question for you. Everybody wants to be bullish, and I understand that, and it's great, and it's good for everything. But the bottom line is this. When it's all said and done, if this market tops out at $2.85 or $3 or $3.20 and starts to crash, and we're all waiting for a certain signal to sell, and then you know it's $2.50 before we get sold, everybody has a lot of very disappointed customers.
Sure.
So, what kind of a signal would you look at on corner beans right now and say this thing's tipping over?
That's going to be the tough answer, and I wished I had a better answer for you that I'm going to give you, but I'll tell you this. Here's how I would play it. I'd make my bet right now that the hook down we had this week in corn was trouble. I'd sell and put a stop above this week's high.
Okay.
In other words, I would err when you have prices at these levels. If I'm going to sell the board, I'm going to err on the side of selling it, and then letting it take me out, because if it takes me out, then we're heading higher.
So you don't mind losing 7 or 8 times before you finally hit it?
Well, 7 or 8 times I might mind losing, but right now, I mean, this is only, I have had, this will only be the second even potential weekly signal I've had this calendar year on corn as a possible sale. So I don't mind losing 3 or 4 times if I have to, as long as they're not that big.
Well, what about put options? That's a strategy we've been using, is use the puts, and that eliminates getting whacked maybe 3 or 4 or 5 times or whatever it may be.
Let me direct you a little bit here on this to my expertise. My expertise is more as a market analyst than as a strategist. Okay, so I do know that if the corn market goes, the corn market does show me a weekly pattern right now that has risk to it, that it could be topping right here. And this is, we're 52 weeks, or 53 weeks, actually, from last year's low in corn on the July contract. So was the low, was the anniversary last week's low, or is it going to be this week's high? I won't know until I take one or the other out, but last week's low is so blooming far away. Last week's low also fit some other lesser timing that I had to be friendly, and we're making higher highs, higher lows on a weekly chart. So as a trader, I'm bullish because of the markets making higher highs, higher lows. But as a hedger, as a producer, I'm long right here. I've got a possible weekly buying exhaustion in here this week, so I can sell this. If I get stopped out, I go back to a neutral position or a net long in a cash market position.
Glenn, we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. Bill Biederman of Allendale joining us today, along with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. That's this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.